From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the first day of July 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Harry Cooney of Growmark will join us to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, Bob Goodlatte is still on the trail of the RFS, and there is a new administrator at NASS. We'll have complete details in a few moments, and then we'll take a complete look at yesterday's National Agricultural Statistics Service crop progress and weather reports. Hey, in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast, too. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby July wheat up 6.25 cents at $8.49¾. September at $8.64¾, up 6. And December wheat futures at $8.88, up 6¼. Kansas July wheat at $8.74 for the hard red, down 9 cents today. July corn futures 5¼ cents the loss at $7.19½, $7.19½. And September at $7.32¼, down 5½. December futures in the corn pit at $7.52, new crop down 5 cents, and the March contract down a nickel at $7.68¾. July soybeans $16.28, up 23. August at $16.23, up 25. September $16.15, up 31. And November soybeans at $16.10. Finish the day 36 cents higher. July bean meal futures at $4.37.70, up $3.70. July bean oil at $66.71, 67 cents higher. August feeder cattle at $103.32½, down a dime for the day. The October futures at $110.97½, 2½ cents lower on the afternoon. August feeders at $112.17½, 30 cents higher, and the September futures at $113.82½, up 27½ cents. Lean hog futures trading the July futures at $7.90, down 87½ cents, and the August contract in the lean hog $7.30, down 60 cents for the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. In just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Here's what the outside markets look like this afternoon. August crude oil futures at $140.50 are trading 50 cents a barrel higher at this hour. September futures at $141.35, up 77. July ethanol down 2 7/10 at $2.82. August futures at $2.83¼. They're off 0.3 cents for the afternoon. Up 0.3 cents for the afternoon. August contract in the natural gas at $13.50¼, up 15¼ cents. And the August heating oil at $3.94¼, up 3¼ cents for the day. Propane futures are trading $1.92¼, up 5¼ cents. The gold futures trading the July contract at $9.42.50. up $16.30 this afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 11,365, is just about 16 points higher on the afternoon. And the U.S. dollar is down 0.09 at 72.37 for the day. CRB index now stands at 467.27. That's up 453. A flood warning is in effect for some rivers in western Illinois. Of course, that until further notice. Here's what Ed Kieser says the weather will be like. He's our chief meteorologist. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy skies across the two-state region. Lows will range in Illinois and Indiana between 59 and 65. And tomorrow, Ed says, in northern and west central Illinois, cloudiness, some scattered showers, thunderstorms arriving during the afternoon. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs will range tomorrow between 85 and 92. The extended forecast says showers and thunderstorms are expected across the two-state region from Wednesday evening through Thursday evening. Some of those thunderstorms will produce downpours and locally heavy amounts, says Ed. Rainfall amounts will be highly variable, though. Showers and thunderstorms will likely continue on Friday, the 4th of July.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Learned Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, joins us to take a look at the futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
After a bearish corn report from USDA yesterday, one for the wheat as well, futures managed to turn around on a Tuesday.
Well, you know, we kept corn in the red most of the day and all day here that way. We did turn the beans, and the beans really turned, let alone in the corn that way, Todd. It seemed like the fund liquidation continued today as we thought we started to see some rationing at the $8 level there. And, of course, the weather, of course, is much better. We did see a 2% increase in the crop ratings yesterday afternoon and, 11% increase in Minnesota. And a few things like that, and all our corn's looking a little better than it did. We're just trying to get figured out how much of it is planted late, how much of it's in danger of pollination problems, early frost, and how many acres are going to be harvested. And I think for right now we're seeing some maybe anticipation there could be some ethanol recalls of the government cutting back on what's going to have to be demanded that way. So that a little heavy, but boy, the beans sure weren't heavy today.
No, they weren't heavy. Up 23 cents, $16.28 in the July. November contract at $16.10, up 36. A lot of upside potential left there?
You know, we thought the air was getting pretty thin, anywhere close to $16 on these, but they sure didn't seem like they were running out of air towards the last few minutes of the market today, Todd. You know, we're seeing, of course, the outside markets, the crude oil being over a dollar higher, the dollar being very weak again, gold being up $13, $14 today. The stock market seeing some liquidation along the way. So it seems like all those things seem to go towards the oil and the bean oil and help spur the rally there. And we did see continued fund buying there. First of the month, we're seeing a little more fund activity in the beans as far as numbers and on the buy side, of course, and some of the index money coming in there. But all in all, we have to wonder if the air isn't getting a little thin on these beans over $16.
Of course, we're in new contract highs today.
We're in new contract highs, and that tells us that we don't know where resistance is anymore because we broke through every bit of it.
Well, you don't know where the resistance is, so you got to guess what kind of topside potential there is in the bean market.
Oh, you know, it's just hard to say the way that this rattled on like this, but basically a move like this, you know, projects to a stronger day tomorrow.
Yeah, how much trade was there in the bean market today?
Well, you know, the volume was fairly good. It's, I think as we looked here at noon, that the funds had been net buyers of 3,000 wheat, 4,000 beans, and 1,500 oil and 2,000 meal. Now, that was their net buying position there, so that was in addition to that. The other thing, we did notice quite a sizable reduction in the open interest in the corn of over 20,000 yesterday on the liquidation phase.
You know, I do want to talk about the corn because I said it was a turnaround Tuesday, just a bit in the corn, but after a 30-cent drop in the marketplace, a nickel lower on the follow-through is not terribly bad for a close, I would think.
No, considering that if we looked, it was down 9 to 10 cents in the synthetics yesterday on the close. So it was actually trading lower than what it closed today at the close yesterday. So number one, the worrisome part of today was there were probably about 12:30 when we were down 20 cents in the corn, or 18 to 19 cents, and sitting down there, and it was rather worrisome. But come back like it did on the close. Actually, was a quite strong close in the corn, Todd.
Anything else to add for the day?
I think, you know, we're going to want to watch and see how the crude oil and the dollar trades tomorrow, and that's going to probably give us our indication of what we're going to do.
And I suppose we probably ought to make note that there is now a gap lower in the continuous, actually, in the harvest month of the corn, even when you include the overnight trade. There wasn't yesterday because we had pre-trade on Sunday night, but
right.
Today there is now a gap lower there, too.
That's a gap lower, and that's one of those things that you have to watch.
Okay, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In today's agricultural news, 51 Republican House members have joined in the call to reduce the 2009 renewable fuels standard. Representative Bob Goodland, a Republican of Virginia, ranking member of the House Ag Committee, and others are asking Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Stephen Johnson for the reduction to help alleviate the pressure from rising corn prices. That according to a statement made by Goodland yesterday. Citing the rising cost of feed and energy, his statement noted livestock producers throughout the country are struggling under the weight of increased input cost. Goodland also pointed to the impact of food price inflation on low-income Americans. Well, two of the major sections of the 2008 Farm Bill are the Permanent Disaster Aid Program and the Optional Average Crop Revenue Election. During a press conference earlier in the week, on implementing direct and counter-cyclical programs under the new Farm Bill, Ag Secretary Ed Schaefer and Deputy Secretary Chuck Connor said those programs will likely be implemented later rather than sooner. And finally, Cynthia Clark has been named the administrator of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service and will oversee the agency's efforts to collect and disseminate data on every facet of U.S. agriculture. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, inviting you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. Remember, this week, Friday is July 4th. The markets will close for that day, but they will have a regular trading session on Thursday. We'll record Commodity Week early on Thursday afternoon and post it to our website at willag.org Thursday evening. Well, up next, yesterday, NASS reported that 3% of the corn acreage was at or beyond the silking stage, gaining only 1 percentage point during the week. It's 8 percentage points behind last year and 6 points behind the 5-year rolling average. Development was between 1 and 31 points behind normal in Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and Ohio. Condition of the nation's corn crop rated at 61% good to excellent, an improvement of 2 percentage points from the previous week. Soybeans, 95% of the soybean crop has been planted, 4 points behind last year, 3 points behind the 5-year average. Planting was complete or nearly complete in all states except for Arkansas, Kansas, Missouri, North Carolina, and Tennessee. Soybean emergence at 90% was 7 and 6 points behind last year and the 5-year average, respectively. Emergence delays followed planting delays, which resulted from, of course, excessive moisture throughout the nation's midsection. 8% of the bean crop emerged during the week. Soybean blooming reached 4% by the week's end. That's 11 points behind last year and 7 points behind the 5-year average. Winter wheat producers had harvested 36% of the crop, the same as last year, but 12 points behind the 5-year rolling average. Due to excessively wet fields, harvest progress trailed the 5-year average in Illinois, Kansas, and Missouri by 36, 33, and 37 points, respectively.
This is Greg Tayson, director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending June 29, 2008. Steady field work took place this week under sun and warm winds, even as showers and thunderstorms surfaced sporadically across the state of Iowa. High winds and heavy rains in the western and central districts caused minor crop damage and isolated additional flooding in fields that had been replanted. Otherwise, corn and soybean crops continued to recover from past week's excessive rain and flooding. There were 4.3 days suitable for field work in Iowa compared to 5.8 days last year at this time. Corn condition was rated 53% good to excellent, and 11% was replanted or to be replanted. Soybeans are 92% emerged which is 8% behind the five-year average. Soybean condition is 56% good to excellent, with 12% of the crop replanted or to be replanted. First cutting alfalfa is 83% complete, and 68% of the oat crop was at or beyond the heading stage. 8% of the oat crop in Iowa was turning color, which was 1 week behind normal. This is Greg Tayson with the Iowa Weekly Crops and Weather Report.
This is Mark Schleusener reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending June 29th. Last week was cooler than average around Illinois, as temperatures averaged 1.3 degrees below normal. Rainfall, however, was above average in most parts of the state. Overall, the state averaged 0.39 inches above normal rainfall for the week. Wheat harvest reached 37% complete, but still lags behind the five-year average of 73%. Virtually all wheat around the state has turned yellow, and 66% is considered to be ripe as of Sunday, June 29. The crop is rated 5% poor, 61% fair, 27% good, and 7% excellent. Soybean planting progressed a little last week and reached 97% complete, compared to 100% last year and 99% for the five-year average for this date. 2% of the crop is blooming compared to 14% normally. 52% of the crop is rated in good or excellent condition. The average height of the corn crop was reported as 35 inches, compared to 62 inches 1 year ago and 52 inches normally. The crop's condition was reported as 60% in good or excellent condition. I would like to thank all Illinois farmers and ranchers that responded to our June surveys for acreage, yield, milk production, hog production, and grains in storage. Your reports help us to tell the story of Illinois agriculture with data straight from the source. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the Crop World Report for the week ending June 29th. Many producers reported that they needed warmer weather and a break from the rain. Unfortunately, several rain events, some with hail, arrived during the week, causing some damage. The rains were just enough to keep the fields wet and prevent sprayers from getting into the fields, adding to the weed problem. Development of the field crops remains behind normal, and the persistent rains make it difficult for the farmers to side-dress corn with nitrogen. The wet conditions finally gave way to warmer weather, and the yellow areas of the cornfields are disappearing, and some replanted fields were emerging. The winter wheat harvest is gaining momentum in southern and central Indiana, with planting of double-crop soybeans following as quickly as possible. Precipitation ranged from 0.31 to 2.49 inches. Temperatures averaged from a high of 92 to a low of 47 degrees. For the week, 4.4 days were rated as suitable for field work. 59% of the corn acreage was rated as good to excellent, unchanged from last week and compared with 55% last year at this time. Most of the replanting of drowned-out corn has ended. 96% of the intended soybean acreage has been planted, compared with 100% for last year and 99% for the five-year average. By area of the state, 99% has been planted in the north, 97% in the central region, and 90% in southern Indiana. 90% of the planted soybean acreage has emerged, compared with 99% for last year and 96% for the five-year average. 26% of the winter wheat acreage has been harvested, compared with 45% for last year and 42% for the five-year average. Winter wheat condition for the week improved and was rated at 77% good to excellent, compared to 34% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
This is Becky Summer of the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service Nebraska Field Office with the Crop Weather Report for the week ending June 29, 2008. Continued below normal temperatures, rain, wind, and hail was seen around the state again this week. Overall, corn conditions rated 70% good or excellent, well below last year's crop rating. Soybean planting is nearly complete and on average a week and a half behind on emerging. Winter wheat is a week behind in turning color, with harvest expected to begin around July 1st. Wheat conditions are mostly good or excellent. Oat conditions rated 91% good or excellent. More than three-quarters of the crop has headed, which is a week behind the average. 75% of the alfalfa acreage rated good or excellent, with first cutting nearing completion and some producers starting on second cutting. Pasture and range conditions are mostly good or excellent. This is Becky Summer of the USDA NAS Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Land Grant in Urbana, Illinois, the University of Illinois. I'm your host, Todd Gleason. Time to take our Tuesday look at the energy markets. First Tuesday of the month, Harry Cooney of Bloomington, Illinois, and GrowMark joins us this afternoon to talk about the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Harry.
Hi, Todd. Mm-hmm. We're starting our summer fireworks for the 4th of July a little early here in the energy complex.
Well, sure looks like it happened a little early. We had new contract highs in the last week.
That's right. We had a lot of resistance in the crude oil market when you look at a price chart around $140, and we had a lot of support down around 130 to 132. We stayed in that range for probably about 2 weeks, and just here in the last few days, we've popped out of it, ended June on a very strong tone, and it looks like we're poised for a run up in the upper 140s here to almost that $150 mark. A lot of analysts have talked about the $150 mark, and all you can say is the trend is definitely still higher, and it looks like we may want to try to go to that here over the next couple of weeks.
How much does that have to do with summer months consumption in the United States? We are one of the largest crude oil users in the world, or we are the largest crude oil user in the world.
Well, we do use a lot of, in the summertime, Billy Bob's going on vacation with his mom and dad, and so a lot of travelers out there, even though this year I think is one of the first times in maybe 8 or 10 years when 4th of July consumption might be down just a little bit. And we're actually seeing some of those reduced consumption numbers through the local basis levels. Of course, basis is the difference between the local cash price and the futures market in New York. Some of these basis levels have been very weak compared to what they would historically be for at this time of year. And when we look at stocks here in the Midwest, stocks of gasoline and diesel fuel are very near their five-year averages. So that would tell me that the other side of the equation, if the supply is about the same, it must be the demand is down a fair amount. And so we are seeing some reductions in demand at the local level. But the NYMEX, the price of the futures market, is looking at that world supply and demand. So even though people might say that, hey, I've been out on the interstate, and it doesn't look like quite as much traffic as what would normally be out there. The NYMEX overall is looking at the world supply and demand, and we're still seeing some strong numbers in other parts of the world.
And you had world supply and demand figures that were released last night?
That's right. That's right. The an agency called the International Energy Agency puts out some monthly numbers, and they see the potential for further tightening in the supply and demand in the world oil markets going out in future years. Now, again, they're kind of looking down the road a ways, but, of course, the futures market's trying to do that also. It's the cash market looks at the nearby, and futures market looks at the down the road. It showed that supplies will increase, but not quite as much as what they had previously thought. But demand will still show some fairly healthy increases. So all I can say is at these price levels, it does not appear that we've really reined in the demand for oil and products around the world. And so until we can really bring it under a more of a halt, that demand side, it's probably unlikely that you'll eventually be able to put a long-term top in the oil markets until you can get some of those demand numbers trimmed more.
Is it China?
China, India, those are big ones. Of course, we hear a lot about the Olympics in China. China has like 1.3 billion people, and they're deciding that, hey, maybe riding, getting in a car is a lot more fun than riding their bicycle.
Well, we probably ought to get on our bicycle here and be done with the program, at least for this portion of it. We appreciate you being with us this afternoon.
Good talking to you, Todd.
All right. Thanks much, Harry. Harry Cooney is an energy analyst with GrowMark out of Bloomington, Illinois. Joins us on the first Tuesday of the month to take up that in the ethanol markets. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Chief Meteorologist Ed Kieser about the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Ginger Snap Day. The cookie likely dates back to medieval times. On this day in agricultural history in 1796, Edward Jenner of Berkeley, England, conducted his first experiment with smallpox inoculation, showing that the cowpox virus provides immunity to smallpox. By the way, cowpox gets its name from cow maids touching the udders of infected cows. In 1860, Charles Goodyear died. He invented the process named vulcanization, which made the commercial use of rubber possible. Vulcanized rubber did not become brittle in winter, nor turn gummy in summer as natural rubber did, but Goodyear never profited by his invention. In 1901, the U.S. National Bureau of Standards was created. Its duties included testing and calibration of measuring scales. In 1910, Ward Baking Company of Chicago, Illinois, opened the first completely automated bread plant in the U.S. The dough and bread remained untouched by human hands until it exited the machine already wrapped. And in 1953, Cheese Whiz was introduced nationwide by Kraft. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report, I'm Todd Gleason, your host. We're joined this afternoon by Chief Meteorologist at WILL AM 580 in Urbana-Champaign to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Ed.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for filling in this afternoon. Don Day did talk to me a little bit earlier in the day, but unfortunately I only recorded my side of that conversation and not his. But we did have a pretty nice little conversation about the weather and what it will look like over the next couple of days as we go into the 4th of July. He says quite a little bit of humidity coming in to the Midwest.
Yeah, there will be some humidity coming into the Midwest tomorrow, and then again, I think next week. We will get a break in the action, though, over the holiday weekend. Friday and Saturday appear to be days with lighter amounts of humidity, similar to what we've had the last couple of days. So it will be getting humid on a more regular basis as we go into July and August, as this is the typical time of year where we get the Bermuda High setting up out over the Atlantic Ocean, and southerly winds bring in the Gulf moisture.
So as you take a look over the next 2 days, we will get rainfall Wednesday and Thursday maybe, and then Friday taper off?
I think we will mainly have the rainfall in the northwestern Midwest starting on Wednesday and getting into northern and west central Illinois Wednesday afternoon and spreading southeastward Wednesday night. And scattered showers and thunderstorms will be around mainly the southern half of the Midwest Thursday into Thursday night, and will linger in the Ohio Valley Friday. And the question mark is just how far back the rain will extend on Friday, since Friday's a holiday. I think southern Illinois, central and southern Indiana and Ohio will have some scattered showers remaining on Friday, but areas northwest of there will be dry. And by the time we get into the weekend, mostly dry weather, although a few showers may still fire up in the Ohio Valley and to the east into Ohio and eastern Indiana over the weekend.
But all in all, not a bad weekend to have a 4th of July, and it's not a firecracker at least.
Yeah, it won't be a firecracker. We're going to get another little push of cool air before warmer air returns next week. Some models really heated up here, but I think we're going to be close enough to the jet stream where showers and thunderstorms will develop on a scattered basis and keep the high heat to our southwest. So it will really start to heat up over the central and southern plains next week, and we'll get warmer, but I have no worries right now going into mid-July of a prolonged heat wave here that will cause any problems. In fact, some warm weather would be good for the crops.
And fireworks, gunpowder, of course, invented in China. Have you been able to take a look at Chinese weather and give us an idea of what's been happening there?
Well, I really haven't looked at it much because I've been out of town, I'm afraid to say. But Last I knew, most areas were doing well. The concerns were in the northern part of the country, and we'll have to look that up and give you more information tomorrow.
We'll talk a bit about it again tomorrow. Of course, I think for the most part, they've been fairly wet in the Chinese growing regions, much like the Midwest has been.
Right.
Thanks much, Ed, for filling in this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Chief Meteorologist Ed Kieser joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each, well, he doesn't usually join us. Don Day usually joins us on a Tuesday afternoon. But Ed filling in kindly this afternoon as we close out this Tuesday edition of the Closing Mark Report. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find this program, Commodity Week, other agricultural programming, and you can even look up Ed Kieser's forecast for the two-state region, Illinois and Indiana, and for the local area, Urbana-Champaign. I'm Todd Gleason.